EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Leadership Podcast is a production of EMSradio.com. You can interact with us via email, emsleadership@gmail.com, or call us 303-720-6001.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast. And now here's your host, Chris Sebalero.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for EMS Leadership. I'm your host, Chris Sebalero. You know, it's always great when we have the opportunity to visit and talk about some great leadership topics. You know, think about your EMS career and how you got to where you are. Or maybe you're just starting your career and you're trying to figure out what the plan is. We've talked about on the show the importance of having mentors, the importance of having role models. You can't make it to the top. You can't make it to your ultimate goal without having somebody there who can kind of say, let me show you the way. Let me guide you. And there's those pearls of wisdom, and there's those sayings that they have, and there's that advice that they give you. And sometimes you hang on to that for a long time. I mean, there's advice that I was given 30 years ago that's still at the core of my leadership foundation. And today, we're going to dedicate our show to that advice we were given, or the advice that we gave to people that really made a difference. And of course, with us always is our cast of characters. First, our international correspondent, Rob Lawrence. How are you doing, sir?
Chris, good evening. And as always, I'm delighted to be on the show and to be able to have a chat with you guys around the country and really to pass on the knowledge that we have. And looking forward to tonight's show.
Awesome, awesome. We'll go a little bit down the way, Charleston, South Carolina, Don Lundy. Don, how's it going?
It's going good here, Chris. And again, like Rob, just thanks so much for coming. I mean, it's just an honor to even be on the show and to be able to talk with everybody. It's just awesome.
See, I had to get the guys with the deepest voices. So that's you and that's Rob. So that's why, I mean, it's really not asking you back. It's just I needed that deep voice. And so the female voice on the panel, let's go out to California. We'll talk to Patrick Pinetz. It's a little bit high. It's a little bit high. So, Patrick, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. So happy to be here.
That was had a little Italian accent in it, didn't it?
Yeah, I was trying. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, no, it's great to be here. I'm really excited. You know, I'm very lucky to be around really intelligent people. So it's a lot of fun to be able to do this.
And that's right, folks. We did pay him to say that, so that is awesome. But so, guys, and Don, maybe I could start with you. You know, you have given us a lot of. I feel, you know, we even said it before we started recording the Donisms, and inside those little pieces of information, you know, that those little funds, those little twists, there really is meaning. I mean, the one that I hold from you that I use constantly is, you know, I just hold the rudder and the folks are the wind and the sail. And, you know, you have a good way of putting those, you know, those meanings into good little phrases. So the first thing I want to ask you is, was there somebody there for you that kind of said, you know, let me kind of show you the way, let me kind of, you know, mentor you and take you along? Or was it something that you just kind of developed as you went along in your EMS career?
Oftentimes when I talk to younger managers coming up, I ask them who their mentor is. And commonly they'll go, well, I'm not really sure. And I said, that's okay. But at some point you might have one or 10 or 50, but you have to have somebody that you're going to go to and do a sanity check with. I have to look at my personal life. My mentor is my brother. He's 10 years and 4 days older than me. And although I'm always right and he's generally always wrong, we get along. We love each other. I mean, I love him so much, even though if people look at us banter on Facebook, they think we're at each other's throats, but we're just poking fun at one another. He probably set me on the right path as far as doing what you love and loving what you do. He said that whatever you're going to do, and at the time we talked, you know, just in general terms, I didn't know if you'd have told me I was going to be on an ambulance or be a paramedic, I'd have told you that wasn't true. He set me on a path of making sure that whatever I did, that it was more of a passion than it was work. And he said, you know, if it's a passion, you're just going to go have fun and do something. If it's work, you're going to go to work. So he really was the personal one that talked to me about ethics and about doing the right thing, even when nobody's looking. He was the one that when I would say, well, we can do this shortcut for whatever it was, He'd say, well, no, he can't. And I said, nobody's looking. He says, you're looking. So he was the one personally. And I probably have about 10 mentors throughout my career, some who are alive and some who are not. But the one that when we were talking about what we were going to talk about tonight, I always go back to Jim Allgood, who was the first director for the first county EMS system in the state of Florida, which was Hillsborough County. And a lot of people who are listening can go back to 1973 and 1974 when we literally didn't know what we were doing. There wasn't a book. There wasn't a plan. There wasn't a movie on it. You couldn't go to anybody and say, how do you do this? We really made it up as it went along. And he asked everybody, you know, what do you want to be? Well, at that time, I wanted to be a shift supervisor. That was my goal. And he says, well, then you've got to start feeling uncomfortable. He says, if you're in a project or a work process and you feel comfortable, he says, you're not going to give your best. And you're not going to punch out any knowledge and you're not going to go looking for things. He says, if you start to feel uncomfortable, he goes, he used to tell us, I don't mean hair raising, hair on fire uncomfortable. He says, uncomfortable to say, I've never done this before, this seems strange. He goes, that's probably right where you need to be. He says, so, you know, you start a new job or you leave us and go somewhere else. He says, if you say, oh, man, this is smooth as glass, he says, you're really not doing yourself any favor because you're not giving your best. And I've put that in my head on every single project I've done, every single job that I've gotten, and all the way up to his death, we would talk. After I left, you know, we would talk probably once a year or so, and he would always start the conversation and say, well, how you doing? You feel uncomfortable? And you know, I'd say, yeah, I'm really uncomfortable today over this. And he goes, well, that's good. That's great. You got any questions? And there was one time I called him. I said, no, I don't feel uncomfortable. He goes, oh, sitting back, huh? Just taking it easy, huh?
That's right.
And it took me by surprise. Well, no, I'm doing a lot of stuff. And he goes, not if you feel comfortable, you're not. So I think, and you know, I'm honored and privileged to have Jay Fitch as kind of a mentor that I never met. I read his books and I went to listen to his lectures, never met him for a number of years, and we've become pretty close friends in the last 20 years. There are some other people out there. Don Lee, who's the training coordinator for the Los Angeles County Fire Department. He's retired now, but he was a mentor as far as being an EMS purist in the LA fire world. And, you know,
yeah, that's where it all started out there.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Or Stony Brook, depending upon if you look at history or TV.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, those kind of people that will give you small little tidbits that when it's really hard, you can look back and say, well, I remember he had something like that. And he said, I think you've heard me say, you know, if you don't want to take care of sick people, if you don't want to do the right thing, you ought to go sell shoes. And that was from a mentor of mine in high school who said, selling shoes is pretty easy. So whatever you're going to do, if you don't like doing it, why don't you go sell shoes?
I just want you to know they wouldn't hire me at the shoe store.
Well, that's an issue there.
Yeah, it's a prime problem. But Rob, let me go ahead and jump to you and military experience and, you know, being overseas. And I want to talk about the mentors you've had and that one piece of advice that has kind of stuck with you throughout your career.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for hitting that nail on the head. My formative years, shall we call them that, were as a soldier, as an army officer. And of course, you know, I had many role models, many influencers, many mentors. And a couple of shows ago, actually, I was listening to one of the shows a couple of days ago, driving back into work. And, you know, we all learn good and bad from everybody we meet, everybody we interact with, every boss we've ever had has something to offer in terms of learning, in terms of setting an example, or in terms of setting something that you shouldn't be doing. So I've certainly enjoyed over the years many, many role models. I have to say, though, that if you cut the show tonight at the point where Don just stopped talking, I think that's enough for everybody, because Don, you are an absolute sage in the American EMS industry. And I think the words that you just used were amazing and inspirational. And, you know, and thank you for going first, because I certainly enjoyed just listening to what you had to say. We all learn as we go, and as I say, you just need to and learning is the key thing. As a very young soldier, you know, 20, 30, oh good God, 33 years ago, you know, our drill sergeant said quite simply that, you know, you need to get into the books, lads, because, you know, pamphlets or magazines, if you like, breed knowledge. Knowledge breeds confidence. And if you have that confidence, then you can do pretty much anything you want to. And I, you know, it's one of those sort of early military lessons that I remembered. And I've been a bit of a bookworm ever since, because that's the start point to, I guess, my confidence, if you like. I went through Sandhurst, the military academy there, and of course, you know, we had it drilled into us. There were 6 points with which, you know, a good leader lives his life: with pride, with integrity, with learning, with humor, and actually humor does play a part in leadership, service, and courage, both moral and physical. And we could have a whole show on just the aspects of moral courage, and the fact, and I think the what another lesson that was, or another thing that was imparted in my direction, was always think about, you know, the person above you. Think about being the person one step above you. Now, that's not arrogance, but it's actually anticipation. In other words, if you think about what your boss, your director, your leader needs in order to get the job done, in order to achieve the mission, you're able to anticipate his needs. You're able, therefore, to deliver the service and to make his day better. And, of course, that makes everybody's day better. And so good anticipation is a good trait, I guess, of a leader. And so, you know, and also study leaders. And you know, we study whether they're political, whether they're military, whether they're friendly, whether they're enemy. Everybody has something to offer, something to learn. And eventually in those, you will see yourself, because you're kind of following those good traits that people have. And as I say, so I've kind of gone along from watching. I'm a great people watcher. From gaining knowledge, and the knowledge breeds confidence, and the confidence then enables you to, you know, do whatever you want to do and go wherever you want to go.
That's good stuff. And Patrick, what about you?
So, it's kind of hard to follow these two guys, but I will do my best. I've been pretty fortunate working for some pretty big names out there in healthcare, and really having some great mentors, especially on the EMS side of things. Because of the enormous weight of the knowledge you guys are dropping, I'm going to take a step back, and for perhaps people that are just starting out in their career, I'll share a quick story. And that is, when I first got my patch, I was actually too young to work on the ambulance, because I was 20 years old, and the insurance company wouldn't cover me to drive the ambulances, so therefore I could not ride calls until I turned 21, which was a good thing, because I was pretty much paralyzed by this fear of I'm going to hurt somebody. And a very wise, very ginger old salty medic kind of came over to me, and he said, "What's your issue?" And I was like, "You know, I'm so worried that I'm gonna kill somebody. I'm gonna do something wrong. I've got all of this, you know, knowledge that's been shoveled down my throat. I've got a protocol book, but there would be calls, or there would be instances where I would just be scared of, do I do this or do I don't do this, and I'd be battling it out in my head." And he was a little crass, but it's been some great advice, and that is, you know, they're not getting any deader. He said, no matter what happens, no matter what you're going to do to that patient, they're not getting any deader. You're doing, by the fact that you're showing up, and it is better than everybody else who runs away from this, not going to at least attempt to try. And so that was always something that always stuck with me. And he always said, you know, they're not getting any deader. And whenever you're doing a procedure, whether it's an IV or an intubation or a drug administration, any of that stuff, he used to joke around, and he said, "It doesn't hurt you, does it?" And I said, "Well, no." And he said, "Then what are you worried about? Do your job." And so those were two things I always took away from that. And then that same guy, again, when we were kind of going through part of the learning process of getting, you know, you're doing your clinical ride-alongs and stuff, and he'd be like, "What did you do?" And of course, at that time, I was doing clinical ride-alongs at a convalescent service that also handled some 911. And I'd say things like, "Oh, you know, they were easy calls. We were just doing some transports for dialysis or this, that, and the other things." And I would always say, like, "That wasn't a good call. It was just a boring call." And he would always challenge us, because it wasn't just me, but he would say, "They're all good calls." And I never quite understood it until about halfway through my career, where he would always say, you know, every once in a while, when I talk to him, he's, "How was your call?" And he, you know, you'd say, "Oh, yeah, it was a decent call." And he would always say, "They're all good calls," because anytime you get the chance to make a difference in somebody else's life, that is incredibly humbling and rewarding. And so those are three things very early in my career, especially on the clinical side of things, that really helped me out. And then as you progress towards obviously the more leadership, acumen type stuff, some really great advice about thinking every day about how you can help your people, your teammates, your peers, everybody. Everybody wants to learn and grow and get better at what it is that they do. And there's someone that can always benefit from your relationship, and there's something you can always learn from somebody else. And that was something that I really learned, and something I took hold of, especially in leadership, because there's a lot of times when you wring your hands and you start thinking like, oh my God, how could this person be so dumb and do this and totally ruin a project or whatever the issue is. And if you take a step back and just say, you know what, everybody's trying to learn and develop. They may have stumbled. They may have done something completely wrong. But until you know what the motivation is, and more often than not, it's not because they were trying to screw up. But the more that you can help them and support them and try to guide them to a better way is really a different way of looking at things. And so those are the big things. And I've got tons of quotes from lots of great people, but those are really the big ones. And I was very fortunate to have those people kind of shine that beacon of knowledge in me.
Yeah, one of the things, you know, you brought the up the provider side, and I had someone share with me one time, and that I've always kind of held it with me, is never let your heart rate get above the patient's. Now, quickly, I quipped, well, what if they're in cardiac arrest? And so that was really an interesting one. But yeah, I mean, when you start to get into the weeds of delivering care, there's been those words of wisdom that have gone out at all different levels. You know, so with that, there's so much advice and there's so much guidance that we get. You know, one of the things I was thinking as we were talking was, how about quotes? Do you guys live on quotes? Because I'm that type of person where, you know, I listen to the quotes and I put them into situations, you know, and I just posted something on LinkedIn yesterday where I talked about the Japanese proverb that says, you know, your reputation takes 1,000 years to build and one hour to lose. And I kind of keep using that one over and over throughout my career. Do you guys have quotes that you use that you try to pass along, or that you try to keep into your leadership day that, you know, that you kind of utilize throughout?
I'll tell you, I think I've said it here on the show, I've always tried, probably in the last 30 years, no matter what you're going to do, that it's all about the patient. And that's a quote that, you know, sometimes my staff goes crazy when they say, I got this really great project that we're going to buy 1,000 pens for only $1. And I'll say, so what does that have to do with the patient? And it kind of drives over. Well, nothing. No, everything has to do with the patient. Tell me how that's going to benefit the patient. Maybe it won't. Maybe it will. I try to tell them, you know, it's all about the patient. The rest of the quotes I have, I've got to tell you, they are from specific calls and incidents I've been in, where I remember somebody saying something, and at that moment, it brings me to a thought process for whatever that process is. One that circulates in my head a lot is a little 9-year-old boy who had killed somebody. Somebody had broken his house, and he was the most adult 9-year-old I ever met, and, you know, trying to counsel him, and he looked at me when I said, so why was he shot? And he said, nobody's going to mess with my sisters. Well, you know, if you say that out of context, it's kind of a funny line. But in fact, there are a lot of tragedy that we see. And I remember this little boy who was by himself. His mom had stepped out the neighbors for a minute. And he stepped up as an adult. And I always go back to people who don't want to be adults in this business. They like to poke fun at everybody, but they don't want to be the leader. I'll be somebody in the corner, but I don't want to be the leader. Because it's hard there. They yell at you and they call you stupid and they... And I'll always tell him, you know, I saw a 9-year-old once who killed a man because he had to step into that role. He wants to be an adult. He was an adult. I'm sure he wanted to be a 9-year-old for the rest of his life. And I always tell people who are coming up in the business, you're where you are because you're the one that said, pick me first. You're not there because somebody said, I want you to be a leader. Hopefully not. You raised your hand, said, pick me first. So I always mention to him that, you know, you're going to be in a position of the calming voice, no matter how crazy it gets. And, you know, quotes like that, I mean, things that I pick up out of calls, I do remember.
I like that. That's a good one. Rob, how about you?
Well, quite a few. One of the earliest quotes I always remember, of course, was from my middle school, where my woodshop teacher, Mr. Ash, used to say, "Don't waste the wood, boys, it don't grow on trees." Some things you just remember forever. So, but seriously, my team will tell you I have quite a few quotes that I use sort of in the course of the normal working day, and I kind of live my life again by some of these. Von Moltke in 1867 said that no plan survives contact with the enemy. In other words, you can have all the plans, but you have to be prepared to deal with the fact that when the plan fails, you still have to do something. And so that's one that I use quite often. On my whiteboard in my office, I have a quote at the top of it, and it says, "If we do what we always did, we'll get what we always got." And it really is a nudge to innovation. If we're content to sit still and do nothing, we will go nowhere. And so we strive to improve. We strive to do the best we can. We strive to deliver world-class EMS. And of course, we also, certainly my organization, strive to pay that forward, to share it with the rest of the industry. So if we do what we always did, we most certainly will get what we always got. Great fan of Churchill. I'm sure you wouldn't expect anything less. And, you know, in the face of adversity, sometimes that Churchill said, you know, this is not the beginning of the end, but the end of the beginning. In other words, if you think it's, you know, all is lost, it's not. It's just the end of the first phase. And from here, we'll go on and ultimately be successful. And so, again, those are sort of three quotes that spring to mind. We use them every day, and they're very relevant now as they were in 1944 and in 1867.
They are good. Patrick, what about you?
So I am a huge quote junkie. If you've ever sat through any of my lectures or education, you will see massive amounts of quotes, because I'm a huge believer that if somebody says something so brilliant, there's no reason to recreate the wheel. And I will tell you the quote that I kind of grew up on, and something I remember seeing in my dad's study for ever, is a bit long-winded, but it's by Calvin Coolidge, and it says, "Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. The slogan 'Press on' has solved and always will solve the problems of the human race." And that's one of those quotes that it makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up every time I read it, because it's just, ever since I was a kid, I remember reading that quote over and over and over again. So that's one of them. The other one that I really like is, I don't know who said this one, but, "I will do today what others won't, so I can do tomorrow what others can't." And being a fan of Churchill as well, and these are I'm literally looking at these. I have these pinned on the wall that sit in front of my office computer here. And it says, "Never give up, never, never, never give up." And I've kind of tweaked one of them that said, you know, you don't have to be the smartest guy in the room, because oftentimes I'm not the smartest person in the room. You just have to be willing to work a little bit harder than the next guy. And that's all that matters, is putting in the little extra effort. You don't have to know everything. You just have to be able to do it, to put a little bit more work in than the other guy. And that's what's going to make all the difference.
There's a two-line quote inside the British Army Staff Officer's Handbook. And it's the Staff Officer's Handbook is for officers that have just gone through what you would call the War College. And it quite simply says, "A good staff officer should always try and get inside his commander's mind. There's usually plenty of room."
That's a good one. Patrick, the one that you talked about, "Do today so you can have what others won't have tomorrow," is by Les Brown. So,
thank you.
Yeah. So that's Les Brown's got a lot of those great quotes, and I enjoy him. So, you know, we're being molded by these things. We're being molded by quotes. We're being molded by, you know, advice that we've given. And I want to go ahead and turn the tables a little bit, and let's talk about that one leadership book. What's that one leader? I did an article on EMS1. Last article I did was 3 leadership books by John Maxwell, because I get the answers a lot. You know, working on the John Maxwell team, you know, people ask me, what is John Maxwell really like? And the other one is, what 3 books? And so I wrote the 3 books that I think from the Maxwell side. And one of the things that I want to tout is, between John Maxwell and I, we've written 81 books. Now, of course, he's written 80 of them, but it doesn't make a difference, you know? But if you think about those books that have kind of led your leadership career, or that's the foundation of your leadership career, Don, do you have one of those?
One of my favorite books is really not a leadership book, but it's ability in it. It's called Population 485. It's a book written by Michael Perry, and the subtitle of it is Meeting Your Neighbors One Siren at a Time. And it really is a story of a man that goes back to his rural roots after being a successful businessman in a large city. He goes back to get his EMT certificate, realizing that they really need help with their system. and the story of how he gets there, and some of the about halfway through the book, you realize that you're really gaining some great leadership tips just by what he's doing in a real life scenario. I've always kind of liked that book as a process for potential leaders. You know, if you say, I want you to get a Maxwell book, or I want you to get a leadership book out of the library, you'll get that stare, and they'll say, well, okay. But you really have to get them interested. Now, there's some what I call natural-born leaders, and they'll already have those books, and they'll want 10 more. But before they do that, you really need to, one, figure out if they like reading, because there is lots of reading and learning about leadership. And two, get them interested in what they're doing. Everybody listening to the show tonight knows leaders who are really good leaders, but it's not a passion. They're punching the card, and they're coming in, and they're going, they're good leaders, but it's, it doesn't have that passion that we talk about so much. I am proud to tell you that every morning I get up, I love getting up, I love going into work, it's exciting, even on those days I know it's not going to be that exciting, and, you know, maybe bad things are going to happen. It is a passion of mine that I know at the end of the day, 150 to 180 patients got taken care of by, you know, one little teeny tiny corner of it was mine. I made sure there was fuel on board, or, you know, whatever I did. And it's a passion. You know, it's a passion when you go home and you keep the radio on, mumbling in the background while you're having dinner, or you read some medical articles late at night, and you know you should be doing something else, but you gotta figure out why this drug does the way it does. And, you know, that's kind of a passion. And you've got to know, if you're going to be a leader, there's more to it than just being a leader. You've got to have the passion in the business, because you are the front man. There is nobody in front of you. You're the face. You're the one that comes in and either says, it's a great day and we're going to have a great time, we're going to take care of some people, or you come in and say the toast burn and the whole world sucks. And however you do it, people are going to follow that lead. So a lot of people like to stand next to somebody who's singing well and cheery and ongoing. They don't like to be the one in the front of the line. You've got to be the one in the front of the line if you're going to be the leader. So I kind of like Population 45. It makes you, it gets you relaxed a little bit. And before you know it, golly, you're learning leadership stuff. And it gets them kind of, you know, interested in it, I think.
Yeah, I have to agree. Rob, what do you think? Leadership book, what's the one that impacts you the most?
Well, my top three. Firstly, I'm going to take us all back 2,556 years. And of course, you'll know I'm talking about 540 BC, Sun Tzu on War. And it's a book.
Yeah, The Art of War. Yeah.
The Art of War. And, you know, again, coming back to a few quotes, the one who gets the uniform support from his soldiers will win. In other words, if you're not leading, if they're not following, you're not leading, you know. The one who is good at analyzing and utilizing terrain will win. Well, I guess it's 540 BC. So he's saying you've got to use some data in order to understand what's going to happen in order to be successful. So that's some great stuff in there. It is as modern as it is old. Coming across the pond, H. Norman Schwarzkopf, It Doesn't Take a Hero. Dorben Norman told us all what us leaders know, that command is a very lonely place. You have to be prepared to sometimes, in the silence of command, take the biggest and loudest decisions. And that very wise words, he was a man that was moved by, you know, was saddened by, of course, you know, the loss of life and soldiers. And he openly said that he wept for his men. And actually, I can't pretend I haven't in the past, because I have. 18 Platoon, it's a book you've never heard of. It's by a guy called Sidney Jarry, and it's kind of a band of brothers, but from an English perspective, if you like. This guy started off going through North Africa in the Second World War, and then back to the UK, and then through Normandy, up through the Low Countries and into Germany. And it's a story of a junior commander in an infantry unit of the British Army fighting his way through the Second World War. But of course, as that junior commander, he had to make some pretty big life and death decisions. And again, all of those people are, you know, whether it's Sun Tzu, whether it's H. Norman Schwarzkopf, whether it's Sidney Jarry, are inspirational leaders. And I think inspirational leadership is one of those key things that we all aspire to be able to do.
Yeah, I have to agree. And one of the things that I really enjoy about Schwarzkopf is, when I was in the military, I had the opportunity to be stationed down at MacDill Air Force Base at the home of Central Command and the Special Operations Command, and actually had the opportunity to go to a couple of his leadership briefings for motivation. First, he's an imposing figure, Schwarzkopf, and well over 6 foot and very, very a broad man, you know, very, very stocky. His presence was just very commanding, but he had a way of making you feel inspired and motivated, and that you had to give everything 100% to the folks that were around you. And he's had some pretty major influences. So I'm glad you brought him up. Patrick, what about you?
So I 100% agree with Rob about Sun Tzu. I think it's just a formidable, formidable leadership book. But I'm, as you know, I'm a big reader. I read a lot. I'm a huge advocate of saying that if you're leading, you're reading. And these are the books that I truly thought were really cornerstones of development. But I'm also the guy saying, what's the next thing out there? I always am reading Harvard Business Review and looking at what's the next book that's coming down, because I think there's always stuff that we can take and learn and apply to leadership regardless of your sector. So I've also said on this show, you know, if you read Harvard Business Review and you're learning about something about what Coca-Cola is doing, you can apply some form of that to what you're doing in EMS. But for me, the number one most important leadership book that's really not even a leadership book is written by Dale Carnegie, and it's How to Win Friends and Influence People. And if you don't have this book, I will tell you right now, it is worth the $5 it's going to cost for you to get it. Read it. Read it again. Read it a fourth to fifth time. Dog ear it. Highlight it. If you look at my version of this book, it's just worn from being read so many times. And there's so many great things in that book that you will read and you will catch a second, third, 50th time around that are just as pertinent today as they were when he wrote it back, I don't even know how many years ago. But How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, huge, huge influence, and I think is the leadership book that people need to have. And then I'm also a huge fan of anything by Stephen Covey. So The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People is a great one, as well as 212 Degrees and The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team and How Successful People Think. All of these books are really great. And I mean, it's a 2-second search on Amazon for looking for leadership books. But to me, there's always nuggets of wisdom in all of these books. But for me, the cornerstone is How to Win Friends and Influence People. And then, of course, having worked at Studer Group, I think Studer Group has got some amazing stuff out there. I'm a huge advocate of theirs, even though they don't pay me to, you know, right, at all recommend them. But Results at Last, The Great Employee Handbook, Straight A Leadership,
Hardwiring Excellence. Yep.
I mean, there's so many great things out there. But for me, it all starts and ends with How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
You know, one of the things that you brought up is you brought up the 5 dysfunctions of a team. And for you folks that are out there listening, this is a different type of leadership book. And the way that it's written in
as a
hypothetical story of an organization that gets a new leader and how they go about the transition of recognizing the dysfunctions of a team. So it's not your typical theory of leadership. It rolls it up into the story of a corporation who's now going through leadership change. And it's very, very interesting. And as Patrick mentioned, that's probably one of the books that I would recommend that if you have an opportunity to check out, so do that. But guys, as we get up there in time, I want to go ahead and end with our closing thoughts. And I want to do it this way if I can. Patrick, I'll give you a couple seconds as I announce it. I want you to give advice. You know, we're talking about advice. We're talking about quotes. We're talking about, you know, leadership references. I want you to go ahead and think of advice that you're going to give to the new supervisors just starting. Rob, if I can go ahead and go to you after that, and maybe you can give the advice, the managers that are in there. And Don, of course, I'll ask you to go to the senior level and give those guys advice. So Patrick, if we're talking about all this advice we've gotten and quotes we use and books, so if you're going to give advice now to the people who are new supervisors or just starting to be supervisors, what advice do you give them?
I've got a 3-prong thing that has always served me well, and that is for the new person, the new supervisor, your number one goal should be to make your boss look good, and that's not in a butt-kissing manner. It's to take things off his plate or her plate, to be there to think ahead. And I can't remember which one of the other commenters had mentioned it, but make them look good and take things off their plate so that way you can get inside their mind and see how the organization should function in an optimal environment. And then along with that comes with you're going to screw up. I've screwed up more times than I can count. You're going to screw up. It's going to happen. It's just the fact of life. Something is going to go wrong, and ultimately it's going to be your fault. And regardless of what that is or how bad it makes you look or how terrible it makes your gut, how bad of a gut kick it is, you have to admit it and admit it quickly. And you have to make sure that you own it and make sure you tell your boss before your boss finds out, because that does two things. It increases your credibility for one, and two, it shows that you're going to take responsibility for it and correcting whatever that issue is. So that's really number two. If and when, or not if, but when you screw up, big or small, own it and own it outright and come clean early. Tell your boss before they find out, because ultimately, no matter what you do, they will find out eventually. And you want to get ahead of it rather than behind it. And finally, if you're brand new and you're just a brand new supervisor and whether you're super ambitious and want to climb the ladder and be a director of an EMS system and do all that great stuff, that's really fantastic, and I commend you for it. But some great advice I just got relatively recently is don't worry about your final job. Don't worry about whether it's going to say CEO or COO or director or whatever that is. The best thing that you can do is be good at the job that you have right now. Just really take it on, own it, love it, and take names. I mean, and do it to the best of your ability. The best way for you to get promoted is to volunteer for stuff that's perhaps outside your scope, stuff that you're not comfortable with, like Don was saying. But take that job, own it, and be the absolute best you can be at that job. And don't worry about what you want to be in 5, 10, 15 years, because your best way to advance is to be good at what you're doing now and be the best. This best supervisor you can, or the best crew chief that you can, because that's the kind of stuff that'll get you recognized. Put in a little bit extra work and effort.
Awesome. Good stuff. Rob Lawrence, how about for the middle managers that are out there? What advice do you have for them?
Well, first of all, congratulations. You're on your way to the top. First of all, your knowledge and skills have gotten you this far. As you probably adapt to a new position, it's also time to not only rely on those knowledge and skills that you have, but it's also time to learn. We talked about getting into the books, understanding the new environment that you may be in, developing that knowledge, which in turn will breed the confidence. And of course, that confidence helps you be a better leader. And that confidence will also get you selected for the next tier up the ladder, which Don will talk about in a second. At the level that you're at, you're going to have to check and balance those below you, whilst also at the same time understudying, understanding, supporting those above you. Above all, be an enthusiast for what you do. Also, remember that nobody said it doesn't have to be fun. In other words, you know, life sometimes is too serious. The business we're in sometimes is very serious. But actually, you know, if you lighten the mood a little bit, you know, it's actually a good tool for leadership, because people will follow, as long as, of course, as you're focused and you have an eye on the end game, which is delivering the mission, whatever that mission may be.
Very good. And for the senior leaders, Don, what advice do you have for them?
Well, I think above all, I'd have to start by telling them, well, there's no turning back now. You're about to take the front seat of the airline here, and there's really two important things you need to remember starting from today and moving forward until the very end of when you're not doing this anymore. This isn't something you learn for 30 days and it falls away and then you take it. One is you really don't know a lot right now. I know you think you do. You're the head cheese. You're the chief. You're the guy with all the gold. But you really don't know very much right now. Let's face it. You can barely find the pen in your desk. You don't know the names, or you barely know the names of the people who are your support staff. And you'll learn as you go along, but you really don't know a lot. You need to keep that in mind in making those decisions, that at your level, you're not going to know a lot of the time. And you're going to have people around you that can give you that information, that can keep you informed. And you're going to have to, you know, ask questions and poke out and see what's going on. So I think a lot of people get into that slot and they say, man, I've made it to the top. They just need to remember that now that you've made to the top, you really don't know what you don't know. You don't know anything right now, and you need to take that step. And the other thing I'd always tell senior leaders when they start that very first day or it's their second time being a senior leader, no one wants to listen to you today, in a week, in a month, in a year. They might, but they do want you to listen to them. And I think most senior leaders tend to want to tell people how to do things or how they did, you know, how we did it 20 years ago. You know where I came from. And really, no one wants to hear you, but they sure want you to hear them. And if you just sit and say, tell me a story, tell me, really, how did that make you feel? Why did that happen? I think you'll gain, number one, you'll gain yardage with everybody there. Number two, you'll learn some things that while your brain is screaming in your head, you'll stay calm and say, well, really, on duty with a radio in a plastic bread bag, you went skiing. Very interesting. And you'll learn an awful lot. But I think those two pieces of advice for a senior leader, they don't want you to bust out the door. They don't want you to jump on the horse and go riding. They do want you to listen to them, and they have a lot to say. And remember, you don't know much right now. You got to the very top. You barely know where the men's room is.
Yeah, I mean, these are all great stuff. And regardless of the level you are, I mean, there's great information. There's great knowledge in this information. And kind of take it and do what you need to do with it to move along. You know, I'm going to leave you with two. My first rule number one is, and I teach all the leaders that I work with this because it's extremely important, is never allow your emotions to dictate your actions. And that's positive and negative. You know, even if you're having positive emotions, don't allow it to cloud your judgment and get in the way of assisting you in making decisions or, you know, reacting to those decisions. Number two is rules without relationships result in rebellion. And you have to be able to develop the relationships with the folks before you can give them the rules. Otherwise, they're going to rebel against you. It's all about value. It's all about adding value to the workforce. It's all about bringing them forward. It's all about giving them the tools they have to do their jobs. They're the ones that are going to make you look the best, as it was talked about on this show. And your role and your responsibility is to give them the tools that they need and to help them progress throughout their career. And it's going to pay you back in spades. So for everybody out there, for Don Lundy, Patrick Pianezza, Rob Lawrence, I'm Chris Sabalero. And until next time, everybody have a great night.